broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
And a bright and sunshiny Friday morning to you, Bolts Nation. We are in the middle of something here, aren't we? This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, and my name is Tom Lang. I am proud to be your host because this is, so far, quite the ride. Is the job done? Not even halfway done yet. Said it last week. You get the emotions up for a big series against Boston, and if we can finish the job here over the next week, well, even still, you're halfway home, living on a prayer. Where to begin? You know, my family and friends that are listening to this podcast, a special hello to you. You know me over the years. I'm not one who is, say, traditionally organized. I don't have planners or color coders or anything like that. There's a lot of you out there that are. You have to have your reminders set and post-it notes and you have them all color-coded, rainbow-wise, maybe Roy G. Biv. I don't make lists. However, with that said, today I needed to. There has been so much that's happened between last week's episode previewing Boston-Tampa Bay, which I said, a lot of hype in there, and this week's episode of the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, a lot of stuff. So I had to write out this long list on a legal pad. I'm looking at it right now. And note number one about these first three games, we're the better team. 180 minutes have been played in this series. Tampa Bay has been the better team for a lot more of those minutes than Boston. Plain and simple. I'll give you a quick recap of the three games. Game number one, frankly, through 40 minutes, I thought we were better than Boston. We didn't have the passion and the intensity that you need to have it at. They were coming out of a game seven against Toronto, a big win, emotional win at home, and they looked like they were more dialed into the passion department, but we had the puck in their zone more often than Boston had it in our zone. We generated a lot of high percentage chances, and Tuukka Rask came up with a lot of big saves, and a bounce here or there, a double deflector on a power play, and you're probably tied after two. I thought we played just fine from a professional standpoint in game one through 40 minutes. Marchand tips in a wonderfully constructed play, finishes the job, and Boston goes up 4-2 in the third period, and the wheels fall off. We didn't have the intensity where we needed to, but I thought we brought it from a professional standpoint, if that makes any sense. But we were reminded what passion it takes to win a series like this against a team like Boston. In game two, we're like Hornets, swarming all over the ice, first 10 shots of the game, which really does indicate what it looked like. Boston was stifled. We're up 1-0 on a Yanni Gourde power play goal, finally. And, you know, it was a really weird atmosphere in Amalie Arena that night. It was very quiet, periods one and two especially. Really odd. It was almost like the fans were expecting the shoe to drop and Boston to come out victorious or something after what they saw in game one. A good effort, but not good enough type deal. But game two, we were quicker. We generated so many turnovers. Boston could not get out in transition. It just looked like we were running circles around them for most of the game. Boston's a good team. They're going to counterattack, but trust me, you know, these last two efforts, if you're a Boston fan, you've got to be concerned because game three was a carbon copy of game two. Boston looks good for maybe the first 60 to 80 seconds. Then there we go. Off to the races. A quick turnover by Boston. Johnson to Palat. Back of the net. 1-0. Palat tip. 3 minutes later, 2-0. We're playing from ahead. And they can't seem to get out in transition. And that's where they have the change at home. They have the advantage, the matchup advantage. We are all over them. Case in point, Zdeno Chara is about tired of Nikita Kucherov. In game three, there's three or four circumstances where Chara is going into his corner to retrieve the puck on a dump, and here comes Kucherov, and the little guy wins in that particular circumstance, the littler and younger guy. We've been the better team. And so we are justly rewarded through three games with a 2-1 series lead. But the job's not done. These things can be turned on their head. I like our chances, but you have to be cautiously optimistic, not blindly optimistic. A best to seven, I've always thought, should be called a first to four. Much more clearly states the objective. Best to seven, you know, when you think about it, it's like, well, you got the better of me a couple of times, but I got the better of you more out of seven. Well, you don't necessarily play seven, and it's a race to four wins. So we're only halfway there. But the trending in this series, the trends, they say we're a better defensive team than Boston. Shocker there. We're better in the faceoff dot. I'll touch on that more a little bit later in this podcast, which is a stunner. And we're just faster and more talented. One thing I did not expect to see was in game two. You guys notice how nasty we played in game two after the whistles? We looked like a team that was from Philly or Boston for a night. Didn't do it so much in TD Garden on Wednesday. But Monday night, we played for keeps. Boston didn't know what to do with that. Refreshing. It was really refreshing to see. I don't want us to be a dirty team. We never really have been historically in this franchise. But sometimes when you play bullies and they're knocking you all over the ice after the whistles, it's time to show them that, hey, man, we're not just full of skill and speed. We got some toughness to us, too. And Tuesday night was a great example of that. Said coming into the series, especially last week on the podcast, that the key to the series is Andre Vasilevsky. And by and large, Vasilevsky has been up to the task. I thought the second period in Game 3, there was a good sequence there, a chance for Boston, if you want to use good in that sense. There was a significant sequence where Vasi was flopping around in the crease a little bit. He looked out of sorts. He looked overwhelmed. But Boston could not capitalize in those moments. And for the balance of the game, the other, you know, 50 minutes, he was great. He made some huge saves in the third period. One was with about 15, 16 minutes left in the third, and then there was a handful of score, including the one on Nash in the third where he's all alone, and he rockets one, and Vasi just gets big, and it goes off either his block or his shoulder, I forget. But it was to Vasi's left, the right circle, if you're looking at it from the offensive perspective. Andre Vasilevsky has been up to the task, so too has been the top line. That's right, the top line. I'm tired of calling Stamkos, Kucherov, and Miller the top line. The top line is Braden Point, Tyler Johnson, and, of course, Andre Palat. Those three have been outstanding. They are the triplets 2.1. See what I did there? They have been great in the faceoff circle. Once again, more on that later when we do three stars. They have been awesome defensively. And frankly, Johnson and Palat are just made for the playoffs. There's something to it. They don't score as much as Kucherov or Stamkos in the 82 of the regular season, do they? But I think we're just going to have to learn our lesson that you got to put up with that. There are inconsistencies on the score sheet because when it gets to playoff time, they're made for this game. You know, the NHL is the sport of the big four, if you'll allow me on JoeBucksFan.com to say there is a big four. The NHL is the sport where the game fundamentally changes, I think, more than any other from regular season to postseason. In the NBA, Steph Curry or LeBron are still going to score 25 to 35 points a night, if not more, in the postseason, just like in the regular season. In the NFL, look at the playoffs in the last 5 to 6 years. Offense rules the day. Outside of a Denver Broncos team for the ages, a defense for the ages, I mean, really, you need to score about 28 to 30 points to win in the NFL to go all the way to the end. Baseball, middle of the order is middle of the order. Your rotations are shorter, so the games are a little bit lower scoring because your top three pitchers can rotate, but the game doesn't fundamentally change. In hockey, it does. A lot of 5-4 games in the regular season, but when you have to have one in the post, we're talking 3-2 with an empty netter, 2-1 with an empty netter. That's the way the game is played, and Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat understand how to knife to the little areas in the offensive zone, make plays, and also get the puck out of the defensive zone. That is our top line. The problem of Steven Stamkos, coming up later in the podcast as well. But what I love about this team, we got to stay positive in the first segment, is how selfless they're playing. I'll play a clip for you in a second. John Cooper speaking to the media after the Game 3 victory. But there are a dozen to 20 circumstances in a game, and this is why I love hockey so much. It's about the decisions you have to make in a split second. As the puck is approaching your stick, you have to run the equations in your mind. Do I pass the puck to teammate A? Do I fire it up the wall? Do I keep it myself and skate? Who's coming at me? How fast are they coming at me? Is it a Sidney Crosby? Is it a Zdeno Chara? All of these equations have to be computed in a tenth of a second. And then the player has to make a smart decision. It's soccer on speed. And we're doing such a good job of choosing the safest option, especially when we're playing from ahead. There's a little bit of time in the third period, I think especially the middle chunk of it, probably about 14 minutes to about 6 minutes or so, where I thought we completely abandoned any offensive game plan, any forecheck, save for the one counterattack where Kucherov is in all alone and he fires it off with a blocker of Rask. We really didn't look interested in playing offense at all. That can be dangerous, but you're playing from in front by two goals, so it's not a critically stupid mistake. It's a concerning one, but if you're going to play the way we are and keep the chances when they have you hemmed in your own defensive zone to the perimeter the way we do, to limit Boston to one and dones, and then in those dozen to 20 circumstances, feign the two-on-one with a low percentage play for getting the puck out of the zone or getting to the red line and getting the puck behind the net and start the cycle game. If you're choosing the safer play in the moments where the safer play is the smart play, you're doing something that we haven't seen consistently from the Bolts in the regular season. And that's what's buoying. I'm not going to play the Mississippi Mass Choir today. We've only won two out of the four games we need in this series. Series isn't over by a long shot. I mean, I could be talking to you next week, Friday, May 11th, and the season might be over. I don't think that's going to be the case, but it could be. The reason I don't think it's going to be the case, we're playing responsible hockey. We're playing smart hockey, selfless. We're playing for one another. That's what John Cooper says right here, and he could not be more right on.
John, what do you think your guys did so effectively tonight to limit the Bruins from not getting the kind of chances they're accustomed to?
I think the same thing we did the game before and what I felt a lot of the game before that, but we're in a playoff series and we're playing like that. And we're skating, we're physically engaged, and they're just playing responsible, and that's what they're doing. It's hard to do to amp yourself up game after game after game. It's a tough thing to do, and these guys they've just found a way. And I guess in the end, they're just putting the team first, putting team before self. That's what's going on right now.
Indeed. To put it simply, we're doing things that we don't always do in the regular season, and we don't always do when we're not pushed, when we don't fear our opponent, don't always respect our opponent. We're playing selflessly. I'll focus on the positives here. I mean, he's calling to attention some of the negative parts of what goes wrong when we go wrong. But he's doing so by saying, we're not doing that. We're doing the opposite of that. He's absolutely right. Just look at our defensive structure in the third period of Game 3. I thought the first 5 minutes of that third period, it looked just like the final moments of Game 4 against New Jersey, where we reasserted ourselves and found a way to surgically end that game. In fact, Pierre McGuire used that term, surgical, and absolutely right. Then in the middle, we got lost a little bit. We're holding on for dear life. Our goalie plays like a number one goalie, and then the final couple of minutes, we, again, neutralize. We take control of the situation. This has been a really good series to watch if you're looking for signs that Tampa Bay is playing complete hockey, and we're seeing that so far. Before we go to break and then head over to the other segment for Three Stars, talking about some stats that are eye-popping to me, the concerns about Steven Stamkos, I call it the problem of Steven Stamkos. One quick note about officiating. Listen, guys, you cannot complain about officiating through three games in this series. We've gotten the bulk of the calls. In game two, when Marchand's in on a break, that is 100% a slash. They're correct. Just because the broadcast seemed to have a Boston tilt to them, and I'm trying to be objective here, but I'll agree with you. I think they do have a Boston tilt to them. It doesn't mean they're wrong about stuff. The high stick on Chara, the slash on Marchand, 100%. When Pierre, I'll say it, when he bitches and moans, it gets to me too a little bit. Doesn't mean he's wrong. You know, the refs have not had a good first three games in this series. For once, it doesn't go the original six teams' way, so I'm not going to weep for Boston. Don't get me wrong. I'm kind of laughing. But you can't be too displeased with what the officials have shown so far. So if a couple of weak calls go our way, or against us, I should say, tonight in Boston, don't be surprised. Officials have a way of always being aware of how to even things out. So if we get called for something that you go, well, that's complete BS, just know makeup calls are coming. Officials are human. So if you brace yourself for it now, maybe you won't get as angry. The key is Vasilevsky needs to continue to be our number one penalty killer. We don't need to give the refs an excuse to start calling penalties either. You know, I think really the only dumb penalty we've taken so far this series, Ryan Callahan took an offensive zone penalty in the first in game one. That was when Nash scored on the double deflector. Other than that, the penalties we've taken have been necessary and or just a function of the game. Some of them head-scratchers, too, like the one on Tyler Johnson in game two. But can't complain about the stripes, guys. Nope, not happening. Not so far this series. Hopefully that continues, though. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network. Coming up next, the three stars of the game. A comment for me, because I've been too hard on Seti Paquette. I'll address Paquette's play and the problem with Steven Stamkos. Okay, we'll talk to you on the other side.
Taking you higher than a Dave Mishkin goal call. You're riding the lightning on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Happy Friday, Bolts Nation. It is a game day up at TD Ameritrade. It's not going to be down at Amalie Arena. That's for Sunday. Sunday at 3 p.m. is Game 5. That will be on NBC again. How do you guys feel about those afternoon games? I like them fine, especially on a Sunday, but I heard a lot of people complaining that they wanted a primetime game Sunday night, but it's a work night. It's a school night. Still going to school down there in Pinellas and Hillsborough, Pasco too, right? Let me get to a comment real quick on Cedric Paquette and his play. A couple of weeks ago, we had a listener react. He thought I was too hard on Cedric Paquette, calling him stupid and saying he's full of low IQ moments. The guy didn't put his name to this comment, but he gave me 5 stars on iTunes, and he wrote me a big paragraph note. His name's Meanwhile, or her name is Meanwhile, back at the ranch, saying that I'm being entirely too tough on Paquette, and that he drops the gloves, and there aren't very many guys who drop the gloves for each other on the Lightning and stick up for each other. I'd counter that by saying, in a big-time moment at the Madison Square Garden, Nikita Kucherov was hit in a way that was considered dirty, and Steven Stamkos dropped the gloves as the captain of the team and a score-first player to defend his teammate. The Lightning are not without toughness, and especially you've seen that in these playoffs. Mikhail Sergachev wanted to take on Brian Boyle, for crying out loud. We've seen teammates stick up for one another, but your point is valid in that Seti Paquette is one of those who, without hesitation, will stand for his teammates. And the basic gist of this post is, this is playoff hockey, and we need more players like Cedric Paquette who will give it their all for the team. They're all playing selfless right now, meanwhile back at the ranch, but Seti Paquette's playing a hell of a lot better. No two ways to slice that. Seti P is playing good hockey. That fourth line, all of the attention it's getting, Paquette, Kunitz, and Callahan, getting a lot of video montages, and Pierre Maguire can't talk about them enough. He's right to. You're right to point that out. They're playing really well. You can trust them with 10 to 12 minutes, especially if you're playing from ahead. They set tones. I do get frustrated when I see them out of a TV timeout for an offensive zone draw, but you know, setting the tone is an important part of playoff hockey, and they've been good. Bottom line with Cedric is I will never trust him. There's too much evidence to the contrary that it feels like a ticking time bomb. but he has heart. And if he does play smart, he's a value to us. They've had a couple of really good scoring chances this series, too, that they haven't finished. But it's not for a lack of putting themselves in a high-percentage situation to give us a big, grinding-type goal. So, kudos, Cedric Paquette. I hear you. Thanks for the comment. But I'm still not going to trust him. It's just, I can't. To the three stars of the week on Joe Bolts Fans Podcast.
Time now for the Joe Bolts Fan. Three stars of the week.
Greetings
to our third star.
Number three.
That would be one Tyler Johnson. And let me parlay that Tyler Johnson love, where he's been outstanding the offensive zone, obviously, and generating a lot of our goals and points, which we desperately need with the Stamkos line not doing so hot. He's been good in the defensive zone, too, has Tyler Johnson. But most importantly, he's helped in this facet of the game, which has been shocking. Face-off circle dominance for the Tampa Bay Lightning against a top 10 face-off team. The Bolts have been in the bottom 5 to 10 in the NHL in face-offs for the whole season. And Boston has been a top team, with Patrice Bergeron being the front man. He's one of the best face-off takers in the world the last 4 or 5 years. 54%, 58, 60. If you're at 60%, you are the elite of the elite. You're Ryan O'Reilly in Buffalo. You're Kessler. You're Giroux. Or you're Patrice Bergeron. Patrice Bergeron in this series, 34 and 36. That's a skosh under 49%. Unbelievable work by the Lightning, led by Tyler Johnson, who went 13 and 8. In game three, he went 12 and 7 in game two. That's when they figured it out. He only took 6 faceoffs in game one, but they decided, hey, you know what? Something's working here with Tyler. And now he's a robust 29 and 17 through 3 games in this series, 63%. The Bolts are possessing the puck a lot, right? Play it back in your mind. That's true. Why? Well, what's helping us is we're winning a lot of faceoffs. Stamkos, by the way, is at 60%. Seti P, more love for Cedric Paquette, went 11-3. Holy, I had to double check that stat. He went 11-3 in game three. He's at 57% for the series. Just incredible work. Patrice Bergeron, by the way, entered our best of seven at 61% for the playoffs. He dominated the Leafs, but he's at 48.6 in this series. Good job, Tampa Bay. Perhaps him getting thrown out of the dot a lot is throwing him off mentally, but I don't care. We're getting the job done, and we're possessing the puck. Tyler Johnson, your third star of the week.
Number two.
Yeah, he gets screwed again, but you know what? That Torrey Krug goal on Monday night was a little weak. Andre Vasilevsky, if and when, hopefully, of course, we lift the cup, he may be the one that gets the Conn Smythe, but you can't give him the first star. I'm sorry. Just there are other guys who are rising to the occasion and going crazy. But Vassy has been solid. The biggest sequence of this series so far for Vassy has been the third period when we're up two in game three. And he's been huge for us, making big saves. There have been a few moments where he's been a little loose with his positioning, going to the ice a little too early, not squaring up to the puck. He almost got caught in game three, cheating off the post on the short side. But when he's needed to be big and he was our last line of defense, Vassy has answered the call. Good job, Andre Vasilevsky. You are the number two star of the week. And here you go.
Number one.
The Ric Flair woo. Andre Palat has to be. 3 goals the last 2 games. He had the game winner on Monday night. Put us up 3-1 in the moment. We felt like it was going to give us the breathing room we needed, but it didn't. It was the insurance we needed after all. And then the first 2 goals in the blink of an eye in game 3. Andre Palat is a complete hockey player, as we talked about in the first segment. He doesn't score you 35, and he doesn't rack up 80 points a season in the regular season, but he's made for this time of year. He has been vital to the operation. So Andre Palat, number one star of the week. It's hard to not give those guys all the love in the world. Honorable mention to Braden Point, who went -5 in game one. There was much made about the -5 in game one against Boston. But since then, a goal, 3 assists. All of those came in game two. But he's been +2, +2 in games 2 and 3. So there you go. Nice response, Braden Point. The triplets, 2.1, getting things done. Andre Palat, your number one star of the week. And now to the problem of Steven Stamkos. All right, this is layered, isn't it? That first line, if you've been listening to the Joe Bolts Fan podcast since the start, I love JT Miller, the acquisition, and obviously what he brought to the table offensively right out the gate. He was paired with Braden Point, Yanni Gourde. They made beautiful, sweet music together. And I thought they never should have been separated as a trio. Their games fit each other perfectly. But they put JT with Stamkos and Kucherov at work for a little while. I've never liked those three puzzle pieces fitting together as much. But that's what they did. That's the way the coaching staff went. And now you've got a problem where Stamkos has been a bit of a black hole offensively. We'll call it what it is. He's one of the premier players in the world, but he's limited offensively. I won't go so far as to say he's a one-trick pony because he's gone a long way this year in refining his game as a playmaker. See the assist count this year, which is crazy. But he can't generate time and space for himself the way a Nikita Kucherov can. And he's okay at going to get the puck, but he's not the world's best. He's not as good as Yanni Gourde is at that particular job. He's rounded his game to where he's the best defensive forward he's been in his entire career, which is good. So he's not a complete liability when he's on the ice for 16 to 20 minutes a night, not scoring. But, you know, he's limited. He's also really streaky. He can get internal. In talking to some people who worked around the organization the last few years, and this isn't about this moment specifically, just kind of when things went bad in the 2015 playoffs and then obviously with the injuries and the contract stuff, Steven is a sensitive cat. And he's also, and I don't mean this in a weakness way, man, so I'm not calling him weak in this moment. But Steven is, Steven takes things to heart. He internalizes things. So it's hard. When he's going bad, you can't browbeat him to bring him where he needs to go. You've just got to, you got to work through it. You've got to let him work through it. And the hard part in this situation is the triplets are going so well, triplets 2.1, that you can't break up those guys. And I think that's the only way you can get Stamkos and Kucherov both going, is to break up that line. And that line's not broke. I don't know that you can intermingle your Stamkos, Kucherov, Miller line and shuffle them straight with Gourde, Killorn, and Cirelli. That may not be the answer either. So you kind of have to wait for the moment when the light bulb clicks on. That's a tough deal. And Stamkos he's the captain of the team. He works hard. This isn't for a lack of effort. I've seen some of that. He doesn't care. No. He plays hard. He just, when he doesn't have the confidence, you can see it in his body language. It's not effort. I want to stress that. It's not effort. Same thing with Kucherov. Kucherov got involved physically this last game. He had a chance in all alone on Rask in the third period. Couldn't finish. He had a good look. JT Miller got a pass to him from the point. Couldn't put it home. Was mad at himself. There are signs that perhaps a turnaround is coming, but it's a little difficult to give up on it. But it's also, you want to tinker with it too. We're in a tough place. One more positive note before I wrap up. That's Anthony Cirelli's play. Remember last week I talked about how it's kind of like your favorite war film or TV series. And you say, all right, does this little pipsqueak become the steady-handed sergeant or does he cower on the stairs in France? Well, in Cirelli's case, he is 100% the steady-handed sergeant. That dude. He is his game translated to the playoffs because he would play simply, but I just wondered if the physical rigors of a playoff series against a team like Boston would have been too much, and I was joking. I thought it was going to be. Well, little did I know. I mean, from the very beginning, that night in Dallas, he played around 10 minutes. He had a goal and an assist. I thought, there's no way. This is a nice little story. Go back to the minors, and we'll fill up our third and our fourth lines. He's not going anywhere. Cirelli is a bright spot. They were double shifting him in the third period with Seti Paquette serving his 17 minutes after sticking up for teammate Dan Girardi. I don't think it was Coburn. Either way, after the fight, they were double shifting my man Cirelli with the fourth line. And he scores a goal in this game. Doing the perfect Anthony Cirelli thing, which is get to the net, and then you don't have the skill to do it the first time, but you have the will to finish it the second time. That's who 71 is. Anthony Cirelli is going to be a player in this league because he refuses to not do the little things to be successful. It's a lot of fun to watch him play. Maybe he is ready to mingle with a top six group if you need a spark. He will always be in the right place. And even though he was a guy who whiffed on Boston's power play goal on the PK, he's in the right position. I don't know where Stamkos was going, but Cirelli was there. It's a bouncing puck hops over his stick. It's a bright spot. We keep generating these guys. This is where Stevie Y is just incredible. And that scouting department is he entrusts that part of the job to his scouts, and they have the right eyes for our system, what we teach, the type of player we want. Anthony Cirelli's just another in the long line, and I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. Maybe not as a 30-goal scorer, but as somebody that's easy to root for because he plays selfless hockey. Good on you, Anthony Cirelli. As for tonight, all right, here we go, game four. Couple of keys. I'll leave the Vasilevsky one alone. That stands on its own. Boston has to get out to a lead, I think. You know how silent we were in game two and stretches in Amalie Arena? The fans were a little too quiet for my taste. Well, Boston was even more quiet. Unless Pedro Martinez was waving around a Boston Bruins flag, that place was eerily quiet. You know why? We were playing from ahead and we weren't showing any signs of slowing down. Boston scores. A couple short minutes later, Cirelli scores on a nice pass from Yanni Gourde. We're up 3-1. They're silent again. And then we were boa constrictors, just absolutely crushing the life out of Boston. And the building reflected that. So for Boston, a key is to get ahead. For the Lightning, obviously, it's the opposite. Play from ahead again. Score the first goal. Scare them a little bit. Continue to do what you do, Tampa Bay. Another key, transition. Deny Boston free outs of their own zone. Challenge them with the blue line. Back check like the Hornets you've been. Incredible. Keep that up. And then, of course, obviously at the end of the day, no stupid penalties. I think the refs are going to be looking for something tonight, so that's not the same thing as taking 2 minutes when you're in the offensive zone because you want to make sure the puck stays in the zone, or you want one more chance at the net because you feel frustrated. Stay mentally sharp. Don't take those penalties, and see what you can do about setting the pace once again, because Boston is close. McGuire said it on the benches Wednesday night. They were breaking from within. Their will was being broken. That's 100% true. We are in the process of taking Boston's will away from Boston in a building that's been a house of horrors. We've played in Boston for 25 years, and we don't have 10 wins in that building. I know that they were in the old Boston Garden for a little of it, but geez, doesn't look like that on Wednesday, and maybe we'll continue it tonight. But make no mistake, this is a Predator backed into a corner, and that Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak line that I talked about a lot last week and I haven't mentioned here, they're as dangerous as ever. Maybe Boston doesn't have much more than that, but that line is still something you hold your breath for. Here come the Bruins. Are we ready to answer them with the type of meanness that we had in game two, with the stifling checking that we had in game three? Let's all find out together. I really appreciate, as always, you guys listening to me on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast every week. Hopefully next week when we talk at this time, it's because there's another round to go yet, right? It's not that the season is over and we're recapping things. Yeah, I hope I talk to you with happy thoughts as well. I'll leave you with a positive note, though. We won 2 out of 3 since last week. So here's the Doors, L.A. Woman, to take you home. Happy Friday, Tampa Bay. Go Bolts tonight.